You ready?
Yes.
Okay. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. With that gavel, I have just convened the Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development for February 23rd, 2016. We are gathered today for the purpose of an informational hearing and a couple of work sessions. We are going to start with the informational hearing. Department of Consumer and Business Services invite up Mr. Allen and Ms. Berry. And I'm going to ask our professional staff, Mr. Stainer, to tee us up on the conversation we're about to have.
Certainly, Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, this presentation from DCBS is just to bring this committee up to speed on the Oregon Health Insurance Marketplace. This of course, was established by Senate Bill 1, transferring the marketplace from Cover Oregon to DCBS. But the hearings for the budget piece of this and for most of the activity has been heard in the Human Services sub. Since DCBS's budget is overseen by this subcommittee, they'd like to present to you what's been going on with the health insurance marketplace and bring you up to speed on that piece. Also concurrent with that, they're going to Director Allen and Barry Leslie are going to be giving us a brief update on the SHOP implementation and the RFP process. These were two separate items, but they're going to cover them both in this one presentation.
Thank you very much. Noting that we're 45 minutes off the pace right now, Mr. Allen, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much. Co-chairs, members of the committee, my name is Patrick Allen. I'm the director of the Department of Consumer and Business Services. I'm joined today by Barry Leslie, who's the administrator of the department's health insurance marketplace.
I think I introduced you backwards. I apologize.
No problem.
We have, introduced
we have four first names between us.
No worries.
We plan to motor by an awful lot of material very quickly, so if at any point you feel like you need to stop and slow us down, please feel free to do so. We're going to, as Mr. Stainer says, you're basically catching this ball in mid-flight from the Human Services sub, and so we're going to try to do our best to substantively catch you up. We're going to talk about what we do in the marketplace. We're going to talk a little bit about Senate Bill 1 and how we got here. We're going to talk a bit about the oversight that you have collectively as the legislature and how that's different from the prior operator of the marketplace. We'll provide a bit of a budget overview as well as an update on current developments. We'll talk about technology, including SHOP. And then open enrollment. We'll also cover a budget note from the last full session related to marketing and outreach plans. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and dive immediately in. The marketplace, very simply, is the means by which the state maintains control over the federal government's operation of a health insurance, a place where people can go to pick health insurance policies under the Affordable Care Act. We're a state-based marketplace that's different than a number of states where the federal government operates the whole shooting match in that state. We control all of the policy and everything other than the operation of the actual technology platform, and we'll talk a little bit more about what that means in detail. The most important thing about the marketplace, though, is that what Oregonians are able to do when they go to the marketplace to buy a plan is access tax credits that help buy down the cost of their policies. We also provide all of the direct-to-consumer assistance and outreach that helps people get signed up on plans, and we'll talk a little bit about how we think we've been pretty successful about that. I want to spend just a minute talking about how we got here, and it always surprises me to think about the time frame, and it's worth mentioning that 18 months ago, nobody thought about DCBS operating the state marketplace. This wasn't even an idea as of September of 2014. In September of 2014, the concept was first floated that if Cover Oregon were abolished, that DCBS would take over some or all of its functions. We began doing some high-level internal planning of, gee, if that turns into a serious idea, what might that look like? That accelerated in December of 2014 into detailed planning in conjunction with Cover Oregon, as it became clear that that was the direction that that the legislature appeared to be inclined to take. And Senate Bill 1 was enacted in March of 2015, essentially at the very beginning of the legislative session. At each stage, and this is really important to some of the updates we're going to provide you today, we've done our very best, and I think generally done quite well, at anticipating what our needs were going to be based on the information that we had at the time, but understanding that we were designing this airplane while it was in flight and learning a lot as we went through the process. And so each time we've come back with a further iteration based on further understanding. So, for instance, we took over 13 call center positions directly from Cover Oregon and transferred those folks part and parcel into our shop because we really didn't know what our call center operations would look like. But we were clear to say to people we knew there would be permanent positions, we just didn't know how many, so they were all limited duration positions. Part of what you're seeing today is our request for what we now believe the properly calibrated permanent positions to be. Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Allen, have you cycled through all of those folks? Because I understood that at one point there were high school kids answering the phone at Cover Oregon. Now, that may just be anecdotal lore in this building.
May have been anecdotal lore. There was the positions that we inherited were the remaining positions after Cover Oregon had gone through a fairly extensive reduction in force plan.
Thank you.
So those
That's
were
good
probably
enough.
The most senior.
Yep. Thank
the
you.
Most senior people. And then we brought call center people in, some technology people who were familiar with the system that we were using, and those kinds of things. All right, so Senate Bill 1 passed. Just very quickly, Senate Bill 1's main accomplishment was to transfer responsibility for marketplace functions to DCBS, maintains our status as a state-based marketplace, and I can go into more of the value of that if you like, but I won't take a lot of time with it now. Also created a 13-member advisory committee, which the legislature has just approved the governor's appointments to. I want to spend just a minute talking about oversight. And this really is probably the most important change that occurred from Senate Bill 1, which is the conversion of this function from public benefit corporation to an actual state agency proper. By virtue of being a state agency proper, you have significant oversight that was lacking for the public corporation. You control our expenditure authority. You have review authority over the fees that we set. You're able to establish budget notes for us, position control, all the things that go with your oversight and control of an agency come with our inheriting this function under Senate Bill 1. In addition, there's some specific reporting and some specific notifications that go with it. The advisory committee that's been created has the ability to report directly to the legislature without the department intervening if it so chooses, and so you've got a direct line of communication from that broadly representative stakeholder group. We're required to provide interim reports throughout the 2015 interim. I would suggest almost to the comical level of having reports that were due within days of the report prior being delivered, that we were down here pretty constantly at the healthcare subcommittee of Ways and Means as well as the substantive committees. And should we get it in our minds to want to spend more than $1 million on IT, we're required to provide individual notification to each and every individual legislator in the building. And so you've got a lot of oversight ability with just simply the fact that this is in a state agency, but it's enhanced by virtue of Senate Bill 1. What I'd like to do is now turn it over to Ms. Leslie to talk in more detail about the functions that Cover Oregon does, what it does and what it doesn't do. But the theme of this next section is that running a marketplace is more than just a website, and I think that's probably been one of the most common misunderstandings when people think about Cover Oregon as, well, all they had to do was run a website and they screwed that up. There's a lot more to running a marketplace than just a website, and I'd like Ms. Leslie to go ahead and talk about that.
Thank you very much, Ms. Leslie.
Chair Johnson, members of the committee, for the record, Barry Leslie, Administrator for the Oregon Health Insurance Marketplace. As Pat mentioned, it's really important that we're a state-based marketplace, and I want to just spend a minute talking about some of the real-life ways in which we help Oregonians every day as a state-based marketplace. And you'll see on the slide in front of you that the bottom of it demonstrates what healthcare.gov is responsible for, and that's really eligibility and enrollment and really just kind of the manual process of signing Oregonians up for health insurance. Everything over here on the right and above is what DCBS is responsible for. responsible for. And what that looks like meaningfully, and we'll get into this more when we talk about outreach and education, is that we have a call center that Pat mentioned. We have about a half dozen people who actually spend about 70% of their time out in the field engaging with Oregonians at community colleges, libraries, fairs, and festivals, and making sure that they know about health insurance or have access to the information they need to learn about how to enroll for health insurance. That means they spend the other 30% of their time actually providing kind of constituent level services for Oregonians who have trouble navigating the healthcare.gov site or navigating health insurance generally. We have a pretty complicated and competitive insurance market in Oregon, and so our outreach staff spends a lot of time helping people just learn how to sign up for insurance. And so that's really one of the highlights of a state-based marketplace. Another way that we directly impact Oregonians is in our commitment to small businesses. We spend a tremendous amount of time working with small businesses and helping them understand the options for their employees and all of the ways that we can be helpful to them in terms of kind of removing those barriers when it comes to benefit issues. So the next slide I just want to spend a minute on is some of the transitional work that we did when we were working through the dissolution of Cover Oregon and standing up the marketplace at DCBS. We thought about it just in that way and just those kind of two big buckets of work. What we didn't anticipate was all of the really tail work that's associated with dissolving that kind of organization that had some challenging circumstances. So you'll probably remember some of the things you'll see up here on the slide, the applied premium tax credit issue that needed to be resolved, agent commission issues that needed to be resolved, IT decommissioning issues so that we could maintain at a really high security level in Oregonians' information in case they needed those for things like 1095A adjustments. So all of that work was done, and some of it continues to this day, but this is here to really demonstrate, I think, the speed and importance of the project that we did in dissolving the organization.
And just to put a fine point on that, because Cover Oregon was responsible for operating the actual technology in 2014, whether successful or not, it had tax responsibilities for 2014, which extend for the entire tail that tax responsibilities have, which means we have 3 years for a standard amended return, 7 years for audit periods, 10 years in terms of IRS requirements to archive material. And so we've got a long tail that goes with that 1 year, which has implications for technology and other things. Let me wrap all this up into what the marketplace looks like at DCBS. Senator Johnson, you're fond, I think, of asking who do you shoot in the event of things going off the rails in various places, and it's me. As a function of the Department of Consumer and Business
Services. Thank you, Mr. Allen. Next.
I'm responsible for this. We are a much, much leaner organization for a couple of reasons. Cover Oregon at December 2014 had about 100 staff. We currently do this with about two dozen direct staff. There are two reasons for that. One is that we're not geared up to be a large technology acquisition organization, but also because we fold all these functions into a state agency, we don't have to have all the freestanding business support functions that Cover Oregon required as well, and then a number of things I think we simply do a bit more efficiently. The program is funded through a per-member, per-month fee, and I'll come back to that in a moment. We've also integrated into the management of the marketplace the functions related to the Senior Health Insurance Benefits Assistance Program, which you commonly may recall or know as SHEBA. This is a network of volunteers around the counties with a small staff in DCBS who help seniors with open enrollment issues and other issues related to Medicare coverage. Those two bodies of work are actually very closely related, and so we thought it made good sense to manage them together, although they're separately funded, and that continues. I mentioned the advisory committee. I'll just touch quickly. 13 members statutorily identified with the different kinds of stakeholders that we need to have. This is broadly patterned after the Management Labor Advisory Committee for Workers' Compensation, which means they're governor-appointed, Senate-confirmed. And what is intended to be created here is a public forum where issues are worked out in the light of day and public meetings and through public work groups and those sorts of things. The committee appointments were just confirmed, and our first meeting will be in March. As I mentioned, the marketplace has a dedicated budget structure. It has a separate fund that is fed by a per-member, per-month assessment on insurance policies sold through the marketplace. it's currently set at $9.66 per member per month for medical plans. That's the rate that we inherited from Cover Oregon. We've just released the rule for the proposed rate for the coming year, which will be $6 per member per month, so about a one-third decrease. There's also a very small assessment on dental plans. That's a really insignificant piece of the overall picture, but that rate will also decrease. Also, when you look at the rolled-up budget numbers for the marketplace, there's an element that can be fairly confusing that up until this moment, when as the Oregon Health Authority is transitioning off of using the remnants of the Cover Oregon IT systems, there was a pass-through function where we buy licenses from Oracle that largely benefit OHA, and OHA pays us for them. So the budget looks abnormally large because of that pass-through transition, and I can come back and speak more to that.
Mr. Allen, at the risk of delving into a place where legislators should not go, and that is into active litigation, I would just ask you, are licenses with Oracle right now safe and immune from being pulled into the litigation and causing us to lose those licenses?
I will defer answering that question and answer a different one instead, which is the marketplace is completing the last stages of setting up an archive system that will remove any dependency it has on use of any Oracle licenses related to the Cover Oregon project. Similarly, the health authority is in the final stages of standing up the One system, which is its alternative to that Oracle platform, and so by the end of March, we should be off of all dependencies that would cause that to be a risk factor.
Good, that was the answer I wanted. four minutes, Mr. Allen. Senator Monroe.
No.
Oh, four minutes, Mr. Allen.
Yes, ma'am. Revenue and expenditures, basically our revenue is generated solely by the per member per month assessments. All of our forecasts in terms of our finances are coming in better than expected. Our revenue is higher, our expenditures are lower. And I think I delete that here. We have an ending fund balance, which has a statutory requirement to be no more than 6 months of expenditures. We have a rule that we're in the process of making some adjustments to that talks about the mechanism by which we rebate those assessments. We do have some potential future costs. Excuse me. Let me talk here quickly about positions. As I mentioned early on, we've given our best guess during the discussions of Senate Bill 1 to figure out how we needed to staff this with the expectation we would be able to refine them. You'll see the refinements today. Those are conversion of limited duration call center positions to permanent positions, many fewer than were transferred over. As well, there are technology-related positions because of that tail of 2014 work, particularly on the security side. And finally, a position related to purchasing, again, because of the contracted services and work that's necessary to maintain that archive system. I'm losing my voice, so I'm going to let Barry talk very quickly about SHOP.
Sure. So as you may have heard before, the marketplace has an RFP out on the street to learn more about technology in the individual and small group market. We've been collaborating with the Oregon Health Authority on that RFP and have gotten some really good information from them, and so extended the RFP by about 3 weeks. So the deadline for that will not be until early March, and so we hope to come back with more information in March about the technology RFP. Should I go into open enrollment?
Yeah, why don't you go ahead and do open enrollment?
So I'll just be really quick about open enrollment highlights. That was November 1st to January 31st. We had an unbelievably successful open enrollment. We signed up more than 30% than we did in the last open enrollment period, and we finished number one among all of the states using healthcare.gov in percentage of increase this year over last. So we feel really good about that, and we did that in a number of ways. We ran a really targeted outreach campaign that was very data-driven and strategic in terms of the audience we were trying to reach, with very measurable outcomes. And so I think that really leads into the budget note, which was this body's request from last year, which is that you asked us to come back with a narrative description of each campaign, the total amount of expenditures, goals and objectives, expected results, and quantitative measures. You got that report, I think, in January, and, of course, it's out on OLIS. And that report went into detail all of those things that
Ms. Berry, I'm just going to cut you off with this question. Anything bad you want this committee to know? Because we'll find it out sooner or later. I'd rather hear it now on the record than let us discover it later.
I don't have any bad news today.
Mr. Allen, any bad news?
No bad news.
Okay. Colleagues, we have copies of all of this, and in the interest of time, both of you concluding remarks, and then we're going to be done.
I would just conclude with the fact that this is a mission that we picked up a fairly short period of time ago. We've developed information very quickly as we've gone. I think we've done a good job taking this ball and running with it, and we look forward to being able to work with you as the committee with oversight responsibilities going forward.
Thank you very much. Colleagues, any questions? Senator Monroe.
When your predecessor is such a dismal failure, it really has a tendency to make you look good.
On that note, I'm going to close the informational hearing on Department of Consumer and Business Services. I'm going to ask Team DCBS to stay in place. I'm going to open a work session on Department of Consumer Business Services, Health Insurance Marketplace, et cetera, et cetera. Mr. Stainer.
Just as a point of order, Madam Chair, if you don't mind opening a work session on each item as we go.
All right. Do you want me to open them all right now?
No, oh,
okay. So we'll open a work session on the Health Insurance Marketplace Outreach Report. Mr. Stainer.
Thank you. I'm sorry, Madam Pritchard. We've got a number of items that are all named very similarly. So the DCBS was required by Budget Note to produce a plan and report for their marketing outreach budgets plan for both the 2016 and 2017 open enrollment years. They did do that. They produced that plan and report, and it's been included with your materials on OLIS. And that plan detailed very well everything that was planned and went into the 2016 open enrollment period. I'm not going to go into detail on that. You have the materials in front of you. The only comment we have from LFO is that while there was a great deal of information and a great deal of detail provided on the 2016 open enrollment period, the 2017 plan was not formulated, and for a good reason. The 2016 open enrollment period was not finished at the time that they produced the report. But DCBS has acknowledged that they need to review the results of the 2016 plan and will be producing the 2017 plan here shortly in the spring prior to the 2017 open enrollment period. It's the LFO recommendation that the subcommittee acknowledge receipt of report and require the agency to submit a follow-up report to the emergency board upon the full review of the 2016 open enrollment plan and the agency's plan for the 2017 open enrollment year campaign, including baseline metrics for the campaign goals present that plan sometime during the 2016 legislative days, which I believe are in September.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Allen.
Thank you, Chair Johnson, members of the committee. Patrick Allen, Department of Consumer and Business Services. I have very little to add. The cadence of this is a little off because, as Mr. Sanders says, the timing is such that the report is due before open enrollment was completed. We need the data from open enrollment to be able to develop the plan. We do need to be able to spend some of the next allotment of marketing and outreach money to be able to do the work to fully develop the plan for next year, and so we'd like to be able to move forward with that. But other than that, we think we're on track for our marketing and outreach efforts.
Thank you. Colleagues, any questions? Mr. Allen, will you reassure us on the record, no dancing clouds, no women with ukuleles or guitars, no first trees that sing?
Senator Johnson, members of the committee, since you all have insurance, I hope none of you saw any of our outreach, because that means that it was mistargeted if you saw much of it.
Thank you. Co-Chair Gomberg, I would accept a motion.
Madam Chair, I'm happy to make it.
Good. Co-Chair Gomberg just moved the LFO recommendation, which is to acknowledge receipt of the report with a follow-up report to the E-Board. Colleagues, any questions, any discussion, any objection? So ordered. We close the work session on... Pardon me?
Carrier
to the full.
Sure.
Representative Gomberg.
Thank you.
Okay. So close the work session on the Health Insurance Marketplace Outreach Report. Open a work session on the Health Insurance Marketplace Outreach Budget Adjustments. Mr. Allen.
Mr. Stainer.
Sorry.
Thank you, Co-Chair Johnson, members of the subcommittee. So we've just discussed the Marketplace Publicity and Publication Outreach Plan. Now, The budget for DCBS that was formulated during the 2015 session had an amount in it for a marketing outreach of $2,307,672. This amount was a little bit short of what the agency had originally requested. And we asked, there was a budget note included in with the agency's budget that required the Department of Consumer and Business Services to go out and create the report, which you've heard about, prior to requesting any additional funding for marketing and outreach. And so now that the report's finished, they've come and requested an additional $1,732,528 in marketing and outreach funds so that they could use that to expend on the 2017 open enrollment period. They have a little bit of funding left over from the 2016 period, about $300,000, so they'll couple that with this additional funds so that they can maintain the $2 million level per year of marketing and outreach that they did with 2016. So the Legislative Fiscal Office recommends that this increase in other funds expenditure limitation for DCBS of $1,732,528 be included in a budget reconciliation bill during the 2016 session, but that the additional expenditure limitation will be unscheduled until DCBS does complete its review and analysis of the 2016 open enrollment year campaign and completes its plan for the 2017 open enrollment campaign. And once that's done, then the money will be released and they can spend it.
Thank you. Mr. Allen?
Yeah, Patrick Allen, Department of Consumer and Business Services, as I mentioned earlier. We are a bit concerned about that recommendation in that it doesn't make any money available for current work that's necessary to be able to do the research and development of what that plan is. We've got the data that we're collecting now from the recently completed open enrollment. The way we did the last body of work was we did consumer outreach surveys, those kinds of things that helped us figure out exactly how we needed to target that work. We need to spend money, a small amount of money, to be able to bring back a credible plan. And so it would be preferable to us if something on the order of 75% of that amount were unscheduled rather than the full amount.
The one thing I am going to do that I didn't do in the last one is to ask the Chief Financial Officer for their comment, and I apologize in the last one. Let's go back up to the last one. Did you differ from the LFO report in the previous one?
Madam Co-Chair, I did not.
Thank you. Okay, we'll hear your report on this issue.
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Johnson, Co-Chair Gomberg, members of the committee, Patrick Heath with the Chief Financial Office. We recommend approving the department's request for the $1.7 million.
Okay, colleagues, we have a difference of opinion between the Chief Financial Officer's recommendation and the LFO recommendation. Mr. Allen, you want to give us a case for why you differ from the LFO recommendation?
Certainly. In preparation for the open enrollment we just concluded, we worked with outside contractors to do survey and other work that helped us identify what our target populations were. Remember those ads that you didn't see? We did do digital advertising and a lot of individual outreach work with the broker community, those kinds of things that we think helped lead to the outstanding results that we got. We're gathering that data now. We need to do basically a similar body of work with the data to be able to refine our targeting and improve it and deliver with the program that we think will match the needs that we have next year. We can't do that. We can't do that for free.
Absent the additional money, what do you think might be the effect on your ability to enroll? You've had pretty stellar results from the enrollment. My natural inclination is to not roll LFO, but I want to hear what's the downside if we go with the LFO recommendation.
Chair Johnson, Barry Leslie, Administrator for the Oregon Health Insurance Marketplace. As you can imagine, when you have open enrollment beginning November 1st, we've already created a draft communications plan for 2017. The work started before the last open enrollment even completed. We are in a constant planning mode. So in order for us to partner with all of the community organizations like Urban League and Project Access Now and Oregon Latino Health Coalition, all of the agents we work with, to be able to do some additional research to understand our populations and those millennials that we're trying to reach to kind of stabilize the risk pool, all of that work and all of the success that went into 2016 is what we need to be able to do for 17. We need to be ready for open enrollment, really honestly, by May, because we spend the summer training agents, training community partners, mobilizing for November 1st. You know, it's happening right now.
Each year we get a harder segment of the population insured, and so what's left is harder than that. And so if we stall out in our ability to do this outreach, I think we lose some ability to make that progress as we get to some of the most difficult to enroll populations.
What's the downside of waiting till the next e-board?
I think we lose time and our progress won't be as good, and we'll not be able to make the improvements in getting people covered mm-hmm. that we've been able to make.
Okay, we're going to stand at ease for just a second. Ask Mr. Stannard to respond, because this is difficult for the committee to know where to land on this. So, Mr. Stannard, will you help us?
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, it's LFO's contention that the agency has sufficient other funds limitation from the marketplace within their existing budget that they could actually move forward. It's not restricted to the there's not a specific reservation for the marketing, but they have with their general limitation from the marketplace, they could move forward with some of these projects. The budget note that was in their budget required them to complete the report, which they have completed prior to expending other funds. So they've satisfied the requirement on marketing. So they've satisfied the requirement by producing the report, and they could go forward with spending a portion of their other funds limitation in this activity, anticipating that they will be able to complete the report and having the rest of the funds unscheduled so that they can move forward.
Mr. Allen, I give you an opportunity to respond. Colleagues, we are rapidly running out of time.
Our nervousness is about the limitation that's being eliminated due to underspending elsewhere in the budget, but I understand Mr. Sanders' points as well.
Okay. All right. Any other comments?
No.
Colleagues, you have heard the recommendation of LFO. You have heard the recommendation of the chief financial officer. They are at odds. The chair would entertain a motion.
Madam Co-Chair, I would move the LFO recommendation.
Colleagues, you've heard Co-Chair Gomberg's recommendation to move the LFO recommendation. Any questions? Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Okay, I'm going to close the work session on the health insurance marketplace outreach budget adjustment and open a work session on the marketplace position requests. Mr. Stainer.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee. There were a number of operational assumptions made with the transfer of the health insurance marketplace from Cover Oregon to DCBS, including the required staffing levels and the position allocations. The legislatively adopted budget from DCBS included 13 limited duration positions providing outreach and call center functions, as we've heard from Director Allen. And then after gaining operational experience during the open enrollment period, the agency has determined that the permanent ongoing staffing requirements of the outreach and call center functions will require a six-person staff, including an outreach manager and five program analyst positions. Establishing these positions and eliminating the 13 limited duration positions result in a net decrease of other funds expenditure limitation of about $558,000. The second change included in the request was to convert a limited duration part-time position to a permanent full-time position and add an additional procurement and contract specialist position in the shared services program. The existing limited duration position was only authorized through the end of the 2016 fiscal year. And converting the position to permanent full-time simply recognizes the ongoing need of that position. And then adding the contract and procurement specialists is to address the complex information that's the nature and complexity of the information of the procurements, especially the IT contracts that the agency is dealing with right now. And the cost of those three positions for the remainder of this biennium is about $236,000 to $237,000. Altogether, the budgetary impact of both of these changes is a net reduction in the agency's other funds expenditures totaling $321,655. And so the Legislative Fiscal Office recommends that those budget adjustments be included in the budget reduction bill during the 2016 session.
Thank you, Mr. Stannard. Mr. Allen.
Patrick Allen, DCPS, nothing to add.
Chief Financial Officer.
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Gomberg and Johnson, members of the committee. We recommend approving the department's request.
Thank you. Co-Chair Gomberg.
I move the LFO recommendation.
Colleagues, you've heard Co-Chair Gomberg. Any questions, any discussion, any objections? Okay, I'm going to close the work session on marketplace position requests and take us home, Mr. Stainer, the healthcare insurance marketplace budget rebalance.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair, members of the subcommittee. This is one has a number of moving parts, and I'm going to try to summarize this very carefully or very, very quickly. The issue is that when the budget was set up for the health insurance marketplace at DCBS, there was a number of assumptions based on the current operating condition of Cover Oregon. The largest item in this rebalance is the fact that Cover Oregon, prior to the transfer of the fund balance to DCBS, prepaid a number of IT contracts to the tune of about $6.4 million. And so those expenditures that were anticipated to be made by DCBS were made by Cover Oregon, so they weren't recognized on the state's books, in other words. And what that did is it left a very large, what we call empty expenditure limitation, or very it overstated the need for expenditures of the state. And so that compounded with a number of adjustments, including the agency's efficient use of personnel services, reduction in IT contracts, so forth, ended up being a total of, I think, about $10.8 million in reductions from what we'd originally budgeted. Now, that was offset by increases in legal costs, new IT contracts that were developed, and expansions of existing IT contracts, which bring us back up to about $6.4 million of excess limitation. And what this action does is it just removes that $6.4 million from the agency's expenditure limitation and trues up their budget with where we are today. Now, I do want to add to that, the LFO anticipates and the agency anticipates further changes as we move in through the year, including one issue that came up after that we had got this recommendation set, that I had a conversation with the agency that there were some reductions that were part of this that were also part of the position adjustments. So we recognize that there's going to be some additional rebalance to be done, but we will push that off till the first emergency board.
Okay, thank you.
So just to give you the full recommendation, the legislative fiscal office recommends including an expenditure limitation reduction of $6.4 million from other funds in a budget reconciliation bill for the 2016 session.
Patrick Allen, wow. DCBS, just very quickly, important to know that because we spent less money because Cover Oregon prepaid, that also means Cover Oregon transferred less ending balance to us, and so we began with a smaller than anticipated beginning balance. It becomes a wash. It nets out to our net financial position.
Thank you. Chief Financial Officer.
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Johnson, Co-Chair Gomberg, members of the committee, Patrick Heath with the Chief Financial Office. We recommend the LFO recommendation.
Thank you. Co-Chair Gomberg.
Madam Co-Chair, I'd move we accept the LFO recommendation.
Colleagues, you've heard Co-Chair Gomberg's motion. Any questions? Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. And I'm going to close the work session on the health insurance marketplace budget rebalance, and that is not handled at full. That'll go in the reconciliation.
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Matt.
Ms. Zeister.
I'm
going to open up a work session on Senate Bill 1582 relating to Housing and Community Services Department. Ms. Zeister, if you would introduce the issue. And welcome, Director Van Vliet.
All right. Senate Bill 1582 creates the Local Innovation and Fast Track Housing Program. This is basically kind of the parameters, if you will, for how to spend the $40 million in Article 11 Q bonds that were authorized for issuance during the 2015 regular session. We do have a recommended A2 amendment that provides general fund to support some staffing associated with initial program setup that can't be allocated to particular projects yet because they have not yet been selected, but we'll get to that.
Thank you very much. Ms. Van Vliet, welcome.
Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, I'm Margaret Van Vliet, Director of Oregon Housing and Community Services Department. As Ms. Zeister has said, Senate Bill 1582 relates to the $40 million in Article 11 Q bonds that were authorized in the last legislative session. You can think of this as really putting sideboards around how we need to spend those funds. A couple of important points in the bill besides the fiscal that she mentioned. One is that 11 Q requires that the state own or operate the asset that is financed with these proceeds. So we have worked closely with Legislative Council and Department of Justice to put some sideboards around what that needs to look like, and those details are articulated in the bill. In addition, it gives explicit direction to the Housing Stability Council, which is our statutorily named advisory body, to provide policy guidance and oversight to our implementation. They've been doing a good job of that. They have helped us convene a stakeholder and subject matter expert committees. We've got a lot of details about how we intend to roll this program out. Many of those details are provided for you in OLIS. I'd be happy to answer any specific questions, but I'll leave my remarks there in the interest of time.
Thank you. Colleagues, any questions of Ms. Van Vliet? Okay. Ms. Dyster, you have given us your recommendation and...
Not technically.
Ms. Dyster, your recommendation,
okay.
Please.
We have, as I said, an A2 amendment, which provides general fund support for in the amount of $169,350 for two positions, that is 0.73 FTE. That is for accounting and program support and design. And those positions are helping to do the initial setup of the program, and once projects are selected, we'll be working on allocating and reporting requirements, etc., for the bond proceeds specific to the projects selected. So that is what is in the A2 amendment. It is merely a general fund appropriation.
Great, and you'll need an adoption of the A2s. Mm-hmm. Okay. Ms. Van Vliet, any comments?
No.
Okay.
Senator Johnson, I'd like to move to adopt the Dash A2 amendments to Senate Bill 1582.
Colleagues, you've heard Co-Chair Gomberg's motion. Any questions? Representative Nierman.
So I just have a comment. We've been dealing with affordable housing on a lot of different trajectories, even yes. on the floor today. That doesn't really involve your agency, but this is the problem that we need to resolve. But I have some reservations about this program, just some things about its relationship to green design of buildings, some questions about the constitutionality of mixing the bonded funds with private developers, and there's just some other questions. So we need to do something, and so I think this will pass, and that may be a good thing, but I'd like to be a no vote, Madam Chair, on this, just as a message.
Okay. Representative Whitsitt, do you want to make any comments or just record it as a no?
Just a no.
Okay. Colleagues, you have heard the LFO recommendation. We've had an opportunity for questions, discussion. All those opposed indicate by raising your hand. Representative Whitsitt and Representative Nierman will be marked as...
Did he move the bill?
Madam Co-Chair, we are on the amendment at this point.
Oh, I'm sorry. We're on the A2 amendment that you moved the A2 amendment. And we have two no votes, Representative Whitsitt and Representative Nierman. And so the amendment is incorporated in the bill. Representative Gomberg.
Thank you, Senator Johnson. I would move Senate Bill 1582 to the full Committee on Ways and Means as amended.
Thank you, colleagues. Any questions? Any discussion? Any objection? Noting Representative Whitsitt and Representative Nierman as objecting. And we'll need a carrier in full. Mm-hmm. We have any volunteers? Sure. Representative Gomberg volunteers bravely. All right. Thank you. With that, we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 1582 and open a work session on Senate Bill 1510 relating to transportation. Invite Ms. Naburka forward. And Ms. Naburka, if you could introduce us to the issue, that would be lovely.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. Senate Bill 1510 relates to transportation, and it does two things that are unrelated to each other. It adjusts maximum vehicle weights in Oregon statute to align with new federal standards passed in the recent Federal FAST Act. And it specifies that a transit district can use certain sources of funds for construction improvement, repair, maintenance, operation, and use of secondary transit supportive systems. I had to look up what secondary supportive transit systems are, and those are the parts of a transit system that a district doesn't actually own or operate, but that are adjacent to or necessary for the operation of the transit district. The measure, the original staff measure summary, preliminary joint ways and means staff measure summary, a fiscal impact statement, And measure history are all available for you on OLIS. I should add this measure does not have a fiscal impact. And we are recommending a dash 8 amendment that adds, it makes some clarifying changes to the bill. It adds an additional authorizing statute for revenue bonds that can be issued by a local transit district. And it clarifies the type of bond proceeds that can be used for construction, improvement, repair, maintenance, operation, and use of the secondary transit district.
Okay, I am going to exercise the prerogative of the chair, and I'm going to ask a representative from TriMet to come up. There have been some questions about this bill. As a courtesy to colleagues, I want to give them a chance to get it on the record. Mr. Bottomley, sign in, please.
Madam Chair, Bernie Bottomley with TriMet.
Okay, we have 5 minutes. Representative Whitsitt.
Yes, I was asked by another member to pass out a legislative council opinion on this, whether this bill authorizes TriMet to pay for transportation infrastructure in Clark County, Washington, and I think it's stuck at Representative Gomberg's, if you want to just pass that out. On behalf of another member, thank you.
While that's being passed out, Mr. Bottomley, do you want to comment on whether or not you're going to be using this bill to build anything in Clark County, Washington?
Thank you, Madam Chair. TriMet has no intention of using the authority in this bill to build anything in Clark County. The provision that we're seeking was the outgrowth of a conversation that actually was brought to us by the business community in Portland, the Portland Business Alliance, Westside Economic Alliance, and others, who asked us to consider whether TriMet could use its bonding authority to securitize a flow of federal funds to build project development around Highway 217 in Washington County, Highway 205 in Clackamas County, and the Rose Quarter Interchange in Portland. TriMet has a long history of bonding federal funds. We have the only tax, we're the only tax-supported transit district in the country that has a AAA bond rating from both Moody's and Standard & Poor's because of our longstanding, very conservative and prudent management of our bonding capacity. So we've done this in the past, and what the business community was asking us to do was to fold in an additional use for the funds, not to change our bonding process per se, but to change the use of some of the funds. We don't currently run a bus on Highway 217, so under our current authority, we would not be able to use our bonding to do development of that project. So we sought this change in language so that we would have that authority. We currently have the authority to build projects in Clark County where we operate. We do not operate in Clark County, so therefore we do not have the authority to spend anything in Clark County. If there was a light rail project in Clark County someday, we could expend funds there for that. But there's no current plan for that. I think the prospects of it happening anytime soon are quite remote. Ironically, actually, this bill would allow us to participate in construction of a Columbia River crossing that did not have light rail on it, which we currently do not have the authority to do.
Thank you, colleagues. Any other questions of Mr. Bottomley? Representative Nierman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So right now, as I understand, TriMet has a significant unfunded pension liability. And if you're talking about increasing your ability to take on more projects, isn't that going to expand TriMet and then by extension going to expand the unfunded pension liability? In other words, don't you kind of need to maybe get a handle on what you have going right now before you can take on more?
Madam Chair, Representative Nierman, TriMet has adopted a financial strategy which has a very aggressive approach to funding our unfunded pension liability. Our pension program is closed, so it's a closed-ended program. We're no longer offering that benefit to new employees. Over the last 5 years, that program has moved from less than 50% funded to over 70% funded for the non-union employees and to north of 60% funded for union employees. So we're making substantial headway in funding that liability. That said, this program is separate from that. And that's why we have a AAA bond rating from the two leading bond rating agencies in the country. And actually, this language is more restrictive in terms of TriMet's borrowing than our current authority because it requires that we only bond against outside resources. So we wouldn't be bonding against our general fund. We would only be bonding if we secured federal resources, for example, to service those bonds. So it wouldn't add anything to our overall debt picture.
Follow-up, Representative Nierman.
It's not really a follow-up. I just want to take a little bit different tack, if I could. I know we're under the gun here. So I live in Polk County, so I'm quite a ways away from TriMet there. What I see from a distance is I see people that are oftentimes unhappy with TriMet projects or not wanting those projects to go on. Is TriMet committed to being responsive to the citizens in the local areas where they're doing these projects, or what's the source of what I'm seeing or what I think I'm seeing, the local citizens not necessarily wanting those projects to go on in their areas?
Madam Chair, Representative Nierman, TriMet just concluded a attitude and awareness survey. So we surveyed 800 residents in the Portland area, both those that use the TriMet system and those that don't use the TriMet system. And our favorability rating is in the mid-70s and in the low 80s for delivery of service in the community. And I would hold that level of support in the community up against any other government entity that you care to name.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to take Representative Reed's question, then we're going to move on. We are all doing full.
A very quick comment, Madam Chair. I'm the only member of this panel, I think, who does live in the 217 area, and I think it's notable, as Mr. Bottomley made us aware of, that the Westside Economic Alliance and a whole range of other business groups are very interested in this. What I see on 217 is a lot of people who would like to see some more action from TriMet. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Colleagues, Ms. Naburga has given us her recommendation, and I would entertain a motion.
Madam Co-Chair, I would move the Dash 8 amendment to Senate Bill 1510.
Colleagues, you have heard Representative Gomberg's motion. Any questions? Senator Hansel.
Well, more of a statement. I'm going to be a no at this moment. I've gotten a bunch of last-minute input, and so I could switch that later on, but for right now, I'm going to be a no.
Thank you. Okay, so any questions, any discussion? Senator Monroe.
I have been working with TriMet and watching them carefully for three or four decades. They used to be kind of loosey-goosey in terms of some of their budgeting decisions.
That's a technical term, sir.
Yes.
Thank you.
But believe me, under the current management, they have really tightened up. They've also significantly increased their outreach to citizens that they serve. And as you heard, their approval rating has increased dramatically.
Okay. Objections to the adoption of the Dash 8 amendments. Representative Nierman objects. Representative Whitsitt and Senator Hansel. The motion carries.
Madam Chair, I would then move Senate Bill 1510 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Colleagues, you have heard Representative Gomberg's motion. Any questions? Any discussion?
Madam Co-Chair, I'm reticent to let a bill with such a provocative relating to clause get out of here. If we had more time, we could run with relating to transportation, but let's just let it go for now.
Thank you for resisting temptation. Colleagues, any questions, any discussion, objections? Representative Nierman, Representative Whitsitt, and Senator Hansel. The motion is adopted. We'll need a care, and we have a volunteer with Senator Monroe. Colleagues, that concludes the business. Whoops.
So we need a carrier now.
We need a carrier. Full will be Senator Monroe. To the Senate will be Senator Monroe. And to the House will be Representative Reed. Okay. Colleagues, anything else? Ms. Naburga, anything else on this bill?
On the previous bill, did we need carriers other than to the full?
Yeah, we probably needed carriers to the floor, too. Do you want to take that one?
I can.
Okay. Senator Monroe volunteers for Senate Bill 1582 and the housing bill. Any volunteers on the House side?
Sure.
Representative Gomberg volunteers on the House side. All right, colleagues, anything else for the good of the order? There being none.
I think that we are, this is our final meeting. I just wanted to thank the members of the committee and the co-chair for moving things as expeditiously as we have these last few weeks. And we'll see you in January.
Thank you very much. On that cheery note, we're adjourned.
See you in January.
Thank you very much.